This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selection there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. We want to welcome you to episode 20, where we review the 1994 film, The Crow. And this is our last movie review of season one.
Sweet. All right. So, but we're not done because we have the attackies, right? I think that's what we've decided to call it.
What are the attackies again?
I don't know. They're our award show, right? Like
that's
the Dundies,
right?
Or the Oscars, the Grammy.
Not ESPYs.
The ESPYs. Whoever else does awards. That's what we're doing.
So we're going to review, we're going to look over the past 20 movies that we've reviewed and select categories like Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, and go through and come up with our own award categories,
right,
our own nominees, and choose the award winners.
Yeah, according to us.
According to us.
Yeah.
Well, our vote rules, I guess.
It's our podcast.
All right, this week is cool, not just because it's our last episode, mm-hmm, or last movie review of the season, but also we have a returning guest.
Woo! Mike, welcome back.
Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks, guys. I feel honored.
So the last time we had you on the show where we reviewed Attack.
What did we review?
Body Snatchers.
No, yeah, and Invasion.
Invasion, yep. Of the Body Snatchers.
Yep. Thank you. We don't even know.
Attack of the Invasion.
You've got attackies on the brain.
I do have attackies. Can't wait for that. But yeah, so we still want to watch the other versions of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So that's something we'll have to do in season two.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet.
So, yeah, how have you been, Mike?
I've been great. Very busy. My kids just got their first job.
Yes.
Mm. Slinging fried chicken at Chick-fil-A.
Awesome. So wow.
That's how much fun. Are they working? Like, how many hours are they working a week?
With my daughter, they've got her working probably 25 hours,
wow,
I think. Yeah, it was
that's
a lot.
That's a big step, going from like no job to 25
She's
hours
a little
week.
In shock.
Is she?
Yeah.
Aww. Well, we have something that's going to be happening real soon.
We do?
So Mike and I and another buddy of ours is going out west.
Uh-huh.
We're going to go to Vegas for a night, and then we're going to go to Zion for a full day, right? And then we're going to be back at Vegas, and then we're flying back home. So it's going to be kind of a whirlwind trip, but I'm looking forward to that, just getting away for a bit.
Oh, I can't wait. I got a 5-spot in my pocket. I've been waiting to waste it on on the scraps table. Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
the roulette.
The roulette wheel.
Black number 5. Do they even take a $5 bill? It's probably like a minimum of $100.
I feel like the wives need to get in on, and make sure there's some limits, some clear limits set before you guys take off. I haven't really thought this through yet, but there's a conversation to be had.
I just need $1,000. I'll triple our money in a night, all right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it works out.
Right.
Yeah.
Other than like scratch-off tickets, I literally think the only gambling you and I have done were on our honeymoon. There was a tiny, it wasn't even legitimately a casino. In Jamaica, there was like they had slot machines at the hotel.
That's right.
And we both took like a roll of quarters and we were done in 10 minutes.
No, I remember it was 20 bucks.
Was it 20 bucks? That might be two rolls of
quarters. We spent 20 bucks in 20 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, well, okay, that's worth your time.
Yeah.
$1 a minute. So yeah, I got you beat. The most I've ever gambled is about 50 cents in the airport at Las Vegas. So
nice. Okay.
I just had to say, yeah, I played the slots.
I was in Vegas.
Yeah. So Mike, what are some things you've been watching lately?
So keeping on the dark tone that we're talking about tonight, I guess we like that stuff. Not Desperate Housewives. Gee whiz.
Oh my gosh. That is dark.
Let's move on for Mike now.
the Handmaid's Tale. Desperate Housewives was 20 years ago.
That's a little different spin on Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah. 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 So, Handmaid's Tale is, I mean, it's a great show if you've never seen it, but it is very dark. It's a, you know, an end of the world type movie. Women can't conceive as easily.
Okay.
And so it's what happens in that kind of environment. And the United States is not what it used to be, and it's pretty interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was like Cinderella or something, or
no, you're way off.
No.
But like, well, what's the Ever After with Drew Barrymore?
No, not the same.
Yeah. It's a good show, but it is as dark as it gets. So.
Oh wow.
Man. Yeah. I have heard that. That's why I have not watched it. I've heard it's very well done, though.
It is. Yeah. It's suspenseful.
And it's what's her, Elizabeth Moss? Is that the main?
Yep.
Which we really liked her in Invisible Man, the new Invisible Man, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was also in.
Oh, that's right. From she started 60s. In
Mad Men.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, which was awesome.
Well, I don't know if that's where she started, but that's kind of where she made a name for herself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she's a very distinctive looking person. I don't know. I like her.
It's a unique look, right? Not typical Hollywood.
Yeah. She's a phenomenal actress.
Though. She is.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
Yep.
Did you see The Invisible Man?
I did. Yeah.
There's a scene in particular that when I think of The Invisible Man, it's the scene where she's in the restaurant with her sister and they're in front of everybody and she's trying to confide in her and like they're having that moment, you know, where they're trying to make things right. I forget why, but he does something awful there. I don't know. Can we spoil that? Is that something we can say?
I don't know. It's not a 20th century.
I don't remember what happens.
Oh, you don't? To me, it's ducks. So the Invisible Man.
He's there.
Yeah, he's there. He slices her throat and then puts the knife right in the sister's hand.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So everyone sees, you know, blood pouring out of this girl's throat, and then she sees the knife in the girl's, you know, the sister's hand. And, like, what do you do? I mean, all of that happens in a split second.
It's so fast. Wow. Yeah, that was the shock factor. Because you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, the wheels are turning. You're like, he's going to do something terrible. And then, wham, it's over. And you're
That was a pretty decent movie from my memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've seen, like, the old black and white, you know, really old Invisible Man.
Yeah, the old Universal flick. And
where he's wearing bandages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, classic. Actually.
Yeah, it is kind of humorous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any movies lately, but I've been on Pluto TV quite a bit. So just a quick plug on Pluto. If you want to watch some free TV, internet-based, they have a channel completely devoted to American Gladiators.
24/7.
Oh, my gosh.
24/7. They have, we love it because they have Mystery Science Theater 24/7.
Yeah. That's what we watch.
The Riff Tracks is another one, but they'll have like Broken Skull Ranch with Steve Austin.
Yeah. Which is kind of like more modern American Gladiators.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of.
And, man. They have a Love Boat station that me and the kids have watched a couple of shows on that channel.
How is there so much demand for Love Boat episodes? Or American Gladiators, for that matter, that you can have a whole channel devoted to that?
You got me. They have Bob Ross, a whole station for Bob Ross.
No, I get that. You know, people are really into him, like, for meditating or falling asleep at night.
Yeah.
So, okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That's what I need to do when I'm having trouble.
Put on some Bob Ross.
Bob Ross, that quiet voice.
What does he say?
Happy
little trees. That's right.
Happy little accidents. We used to watch a lot of Bob Ross at my house growing up. Actually, my parents were watching Bob Ross the other day when I stopped by. So he still comes on PBS too.
But yeah, we watched a couple episodes of The Love Boat. And I think this is the appeal of The Love Boat, since you asked. so if you're in the late 70s, early 80s, and you want to see three or four kind of big time celebrities show up and see them interact with your favorite TV characters like Captain Stubbe, who's played by Gavin McLeod, who just died last week, by the way.
Oh, right. I did not watch this with you and the kids.
Yeah.
And I didn't grow up watching this, so it was just kind of like,
yeah,
meh.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen... The only thing I know about The Love Boat is the opening.
Yeah, the
Love Boat. Exactly. It gets stuck in your head.
Yes, it has been in my head just because you guys were watching it.
Yeah. So if there's an episode where Mr. T shows up, I'm in. I'll watch it.
Well, look for that.
I might watch that episode too.
So yeah, the episode the other night, in the same episode, they had the guy that's in The Master of Disguise, the uncle... That's like slaps around Dana Carvey.
He's
I forget what his name is. It had Stephanie Zimbalist from the Heart, which is an old 70s show or 80s show with Robert Redford.
Oh, yeah.
And then Adrienne Barbeau, who married John Carpenter, and she was in a bunch of his films.
Oh.
Right? And Escape from New York, she's Brain Squeeze. So they're all like nobody you would know in 2021.
Right.
But back then you would know who they are. And I was like, oh, that's cool, you know.
So that was their thing. They always had like a celebrity make an appearance, a cameo.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So what you're saying is basically this TV station Pluto is basically what we would see if we were in the crow world and we turned on the TV.
Yes.
Probably, you know, because that was more recent in that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
American Gladiator for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, I always wanted to just shoot that little gun with the tennis balls.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how fun would that would have been?
It makes such a great noise, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Poof, poof. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What have you been watching?
I don't think I watched Rick Steves on PBS the other night while I was cooking dinner, and that's literally the only thing I remember watching this week. I do love me some Rick Steves. I've mentioned PBS on here before. That's like that's my safety zone. It's my comfort. I don't know, my blankie. If I just like want to turn something on, whatever's on. And PBS has like 6 channels now. I don't understand how that works, but
I don't either.
There's like channel 3.1 and all the way up to 3.6, and they're all doing something different. A couple of them are basically just news, or you're watching government happen all day, which is real. Maybe that's like, if you want to go to sleep, you can watch Bob Ross, or you can watch politicians talk.
Well, Rick Steves is the Bob Ross of today.
Well, that's true. He might be. Rick Steves is slightly more lively than Bob Ross, but
he has your dream job too.
He does have my dream job. I would, yes.
Yeah.
I would love to be Rick Steves in another lifetime.
Yeah.
Okay, today we are discussing The Crow from 1994. It is a rated R action fantasy, pretty dark action fantasy. Remember that we're going to talk spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, push pause and come back and join us later. Basically, we start out this movie, it is the night before the main character's wedding, and his house is broken into by a band of horrible thugs. Mm-hmm. His wife is raped, and he comes in on all of this happening, gets thrown out of, I think gets shot, burned, stabbed, and thrown out of a window.
It's pretty torn.
Like, a lot of stuff happens to him.
It's rough.
Yeah, it's a bad night. It's a real bad night. And she eventually passes away, too. Skip ahead a year later, and he has been resurrected by a crow, apparently.
Yeah.
And he's like a zombie with superpowers. Basically, he's an undead superhero, and he is going to seek vengeance against these horrible criminals who ruined his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much sums it up, right?
Yep.
Who doesn't like a good revenge story?
Yeah. I actually watched this a few times back in the 1990s. I didn't watch it in the theater, but I definitely saw it as a movie rental. I would have been about 17 years old. And I had the movie soundtrack and just loved that. We'll get to that later. But, you know, so Kim, it's the first time she saw it. And I told her up front, because it's such an awful, awful thing that happens in the beginning. I said, well, you have to have something terrible happen for you to cheer for a guy to just commit grisly murders the rest of the movie. And like, you cheer for that guy.
Yeah.
So I think that's why they had to. Yeah, they had to start it off so horribly.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Because the way he
executes.
Takes out, executes his enemies are pretty rough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you hadn't seen it. Is there any reason why you hadn't seen it? It just didn't...
No, actually, I'm pretty confused as to why I haven't seen it. Other than now that I've seen it and I know, you know, the language and the gruesomeness of it, maybe somehow, like, my parents managed to steer me away from this. Because I would have been in high school when this came out. But I remember, like, tons of my friends were all about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew guys that I had dated through that time period that everybody, you know, they love The Crow. They love the soundtrack. I knew a lot of the stuff on the soundtrack. But somehow I missed it. I never saw it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mike?
I remember when it came out. I remember everything about Brandon Lee and, you know, the news about that. I don't know what it was, but I mean, I'm a movie guy. I love movies.
Yeah.
And I just had no desire to see this movie.
Really?
And so it was kind of fun for me to watch this, because it's like it was that forgotten movie that I never saw, that everyone else saw. And I think there was something about it just being a goth movie. I just didn't really relate to it, but I really don't know exactly why. But.
Well, did you have goth friends in high school? Did you hang out with kids that wore combat boots and painted their fingernails black?
No. I did. Yeah, okay, there we go.
I dated a couple of them, too.
Yeah. So I was more the alternative crowd, the alternative surfer crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we listened to Bush and Nirvana and... You know, Stone Temple Pilots, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was more of my scene, too, but I did have some goth friends, so I'm still confused as to how I never...
Well, my high school campus shares a campus with a art school, and so there were a lot of artists, and, you know, so there were a lot of goth kids that went to the art school, and that's who I hung out with. I mean, you know, I played guitar, so we would do, on the weekends...
poetry.
Yeah, they would do poetry and me play guitar, you know, so that we had these events that we would get together, and that's just what we did for fun.
Tell the truth, Jeff. Did you ever paint your nails black?
I never did. I seriously never did. I never did. Well, so The Crow, which we talked about, is from 1994. It's based on a graphic comic by James O'Barr. So quick little story about this. He wrote this starting in 1981 while he was living in Berlin, and he had a tragedy in his own life. His fiance, Beverly, was killed by a drunk driver. And then he was also inspired by this story in the newspaper of Detroit of a murder of a young couple over just a $20 engagement ring. So I guess those events stuck with him, as you could imagine. And they were feeding him to write The Crow. And unfortunately, it sat on a shelf for 7 years, but then published it in 1989. And I'm just seeing here, The Crow has sold more than 750,000 copies worldwide since then. So this movie, just a few things about it, it was considered a cursed production. So I know you saw some things about that.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Like, it wasn't just, I mean, yes, we have the tragic death of Brandon Lee, but even before that, and Mike, you and I were talking about this earlier, like crazy things happened. Like, one of the set designers like impaled his hand with a drill. There was a fire. I think there was an electrical incident.
Yeah. A guy had his organs like fried, basically.
Oh, yeah.
He somehow survived it. But that happened on day one.
Yes.
There was a truck that drove through set pieces.
And that's still unclear. Like, was it a disgruntled worker or was it like an accident? But he like drove through the set.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just all these horrible things. And of course, the culmination of all this was they had 3 days left to shoot. And Brandon Lee was shot to death. Mm-hmm. It was past midnight and they had sent their weapons specialist home, I guess, because it had been a long day. And they said, we'll just go home. We have it from here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the specifics. There was actually like a dummy cartridge. There was like a clay piece that was still in there. It had gunpowder.
Right, the blanks.
The blanks, that's right. So when it went off, it shot out the clay piece like a bullet and went right into Brandon Lee and killed him, which is just horrible.
Yeah, I'd heard some commentary on this and, you know, he's acting. So it took the crew and everybody that was still on set like a few minutes to really realize like, oh, he's not acting. Like there's a real pool of blood under him right now. Yeah. And so they did rush him to the hospital, but I think he was in surgery for like 6 hours and then he expired during surgery.
Yeah. He was supposed to get married
in
2 weeks or something. So just super, a real tragedy.
Super sad.
It's hard to watch the movie and not constantly think about Brandon Lee.
Yeah.
Because this movie is all about death.
Yeah.
And rising from the grave. And then he was about to be married in the movie as well. The next day they were going to get married. And it's hard to separate the actor from what we're seeing in this role.
Yeah.
And I think that adds just to the overall kind of bleakness to this film.
It's bleak. Yes.
And but just a few more things about it. They had a $23 million budget and they made $94 million back in the box office and is considered a big sleeper hit. Hmm. If you're a wrestling fan... And I am. Back in the days, if you watched WCW, there was the character Sting, who he was betrayed by Hulk Hogan, and he left wrestling for a little while. When he came back, he gave up his like yellow tights and his white and black paint, and he came out, looked just like the Crow. He was all decked in leather. And
like a
he
long would, coat.
Long coat.
Yeah. I remember that.
Do you remember that
guy?
Yeah,
I remember that.
That was what, Monday Night Nitro?
Monday Night Nitro.
Yeah.
And he carried like a bat, like a cop would have. What are those called?
A billy club?
Yeah. and beat down the bad guys. One more bit of trivia, and then we'll get to our high fives. But there's been a reboot of this movie planned for like the past 10 years. And they've tried and tried, and it's fallen apart a few times. And Bradley Cooper was initially fingered to be the Crow.
Oh.
Mark Wahlberg, which that's, not really feeling Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Most recently, Jason Momoa was in talks to play the lead.
He's got the look.
Yeah.
Gosh, I just don't see that succeeding, though.
No, yeah. I don't either.
Like, I mean, this movie has such a cult following, and you've got everything from, you know, Brandon Lee, that's like his biggest performance, and he died making... I mean...
Yeah, how do you follow that?
How do you follow that? Yeah. It's almost like, just don't touch this one.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why I never saw any of the sequels. There are like three sequels. I never saw any of them.
I was going to ask you about that. I read somewhere there were sequels, and I was like, wait, what? They're sequels? Like, the guy's dead.
Yeah, well, but I guess that's the good and the bad. He's in all that makeup.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Even when they finished the shooting, there was 3 days left of shooting, they were able to do long shots, you know.
With a stunt double?
Yeah, with a stunt double, so.
Yeah, I read that he had already signed on to do sequels, so it was in the plans.
Yeah.
Wow.
To do sequels, so. Mm.
This was supposed to be, like, his big breakthrough, too, right? Like, he'd been doing kind of B-movies, because, of course, he follows in the footsteps of his famous Kung Fu dad.
Yeah.
And
Bruce Lee,
Yes, Bruce Lee. And so he'd been doing just kind of B-level Kung Fu and maybe a couple other lower budget films. And so this was supposed to be like the thing that finally like gets him out of his dad's shadow. It's different.
Mm-hmm. And it was.
It was different. Yeah, it was not a Kung Fu movie. In fact, there's because there's tons of fight scenes, but not a lot of martial arts really involved at all in this.
Mm-mm.
Even though he's trained.
He did a couple flips or something.
Yeah,
right?
There's like a leg sweep, I think, at some point I noticed. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what scene it was.
Definitely a lot of acrobatics, though.
Right, for sure, acrobatics, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what are some high fives that you guys would identify with this film? Some things that you think were the high points of the movie? And I'll get us started while you're thinking. I mentioned earlier the movie soundtrack. I listened to it several times. If you like kind of that industrial 1990s, you know, it's kind of synthesizer type thrash combined with grunge. That's what the soundtrack is. Mm. And so you have The Cure, The Violent Femmes, which are from the 80s that have kind of bled over into the 90s. You have Rage Against the Machine. You had Stone Temple Pilots.
Right. That was my scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up on the Stone Temple Pilots song in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, I wasn't, you know, it sounded very 90s, the soundtrack, but it wasn't like my...
Yeah.
Here I go with my air quotes again that nobody can see, but it wasn't really my genre of music.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's definitely a moody, like, what an encapsulation of the 1990s.
Oh, my goodness.
And the whole film, for that matter. But what about you guys? What are some high fives you'd throw out there?
I really enjoyed Brandon Lee's performance. Mm-hmm. I actually thought he did very good. I say actually because I have some reservations that I'll go into, but it wasn't necessarily the acting. I think it was some of the writing of the character. But but I mean, his physique, his the way he you know, portrayed himself, the you know, just the overall, I just think he did a really good job. And there is a reason that this is a cult classic.
Yeah.
And I think it has largely to do with his performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apparently he gave his life. I mean, you know, not to do a pun there, but like he all 24/7 was all devoted to this film because they filmed all through the night basically.
Mm-hmm.
But then he spent so much time in the gym to maintain his physique and eat right. They had a birthday party for him and he couldn't eat any of the stuff they provided
because
he was on such a strict diet.
Wow.
To maintain that body, and
he actually slimmed down for it, though, right?
Yeah,
like
in like his previous movies, he was really more bulky, and he wanted to make himself seem more
Shredded.
Yeah, shredded. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and he's supposed to have been dead for a year too, so you wouldn't have all that mass, right? If you're coming out of a grave a year later, like you should be a little more skeletal, right?
Yeah.
Not that he was skeletal. But he was cut. He was definitely cut.
Mm-hmm. I kept on thinking throughout the whole movie just of what like his career could have been. And I mean, When you think about those movies, you know, during that time, I mean, mm-hmm. it could have been, you know, really, I mean, really good, you know. Yeah. And
yeah, so. He would have done well for himself through the 90s, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That whole scene.
What about you? Any high fives?
I'm going to throw in Ernie Hudson just because he's fun. I mean, fun. There's not really anything fun or funny in this movie, but the smidgen of levity that we have is really provided by Ernie Hudson. And he's like the only... He's only the only bright spot in this whole movie, really. Like, he's the only, like, truly, you feel like, good person in the movie, other than the little girl, Sarah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're even, like, you see some of the other cops in this town, and you just feel like they're just, I don't know, they're just nothing.
They're all dirty. They're just, they just don't care.
Yeah.
They look the other way. They're just as bad as the bad guys.
Whereas Ernie Hudson is believable as, like, he's the good guy, and he's, you know, he's getting passed up or demoted in his career because he's not playing the game. Yeah, his wife has left him. You know, I mean, he's getting kind of kicked around, but he's still, like, going to do the right thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he looked after Shelley, which was Eric Draven's wife, and I thought that was a testament to his character.
Right.
He sat with her for 3 days straight.
Yeah, 30 hours before she passed after that first brutal scene of the movie.
And he befriended the little girl, you know. Right.
So we have this poor orphan. She's not really an orphan. She has a mom, but we find out later the mom is like total messed up, crackhead type person. Yeah, she's addicted to morphine. And so Ernie realizes that this girl, Sarah, has been taken care of by Eric Draven and his fiancée, Shelley, which I don't know that we mentioned. Eric Draven is the Crow, Brandon Lee's character's name, in case we're confusing anyone. And so when they're both gone, Ernie Hudson's character takes it on himself to, I don't think he's raising Sarah, but he definitely was looking out for her. And when he sees her at the hot dog stand, he feeds her a hot dog, you know, like he's making sure she's fed and protected as best as he can in this hideous town. I mean, I think it's supposed to be Detroit, right?
It is Detroit.
Yeah. Okay. Cause I was a little confused. Like, are we in New York? Like, where are we? But I read somewhere that it was Detroit and I was like, oh, I've never been to Detroit, but
I don't want to go
this
now.
This movie does not make me want to go to Detroit.
So actually, one thing I really read that was pretty interesting that, you know, struck me as cool is, well, it's not cool, but that the night that they were talking about, the night before Halloween, what did they call it? Devil's Night?
Devil's Night,
Yeah. That's a real thing in Detroit.
Is it really?
It actually is a real thing.
Oh.
That they... You know, there's the night before Halloween, they had problems with people setting fires to structures.
Like prior to this movie, or did it become a thing because of this movie?
Prior to this movie.
Oh, wild.
And it was so bad that they created a different, like the city created a different holiday called Angel's Night or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's people going through the city trying to, you know, basically prevent crime or whatever.
Right. They're doing good things.
Yeah, but that struck me because like you zoom in that first scene with all those fires going, and my first thought was, oh, okay, so this is a more of an apocalypse story, you know?
Right.
Everything's going down the drain.
Yeah.
And, you know, they use some real stuff that actually was going on in Detroit.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, I don't want to talk too much about that because that's one of my low points I want to throw out.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We'll come back.
Well, another high five I'll throw out is the aesthetic. So the way they took some of the color and sucked it out of the film, it looks like an old comic book.
Yeah.
Of course, the comic book was black and white, but this movie had color, but it was void of certain colors, right? And just the black leather and the makeup, the whole look of it. I mean, he looked so cool. He was like a mixture, the Crow I'm talking about, is like a mixture of Batman and the Joker combined into one.
Yeah.
And I love that. I thought that was really cool. He's very iconic look to him. So even though you two have never seen the movie, you obviously had seen that character.
Yeah.
That's like an iconic image, right?
Yeah.
You know who I've always known what the Crow looked like, even having never watched the movie. You saw that. I think we saw those posters probably everywhere.
Teenage
years. Yeah. Shirts.
So just the whole look. I mean, you know, it's always in the dark. It's raining. You know, there has kind of this creepy lighting. A lot of times you're struggling to figure out what's going on.
It's almost so dark it's hard to see sometimes what's happening. Yeah.
And nobody turns on the light. So even the bad guy, you know, with his girlfriend, and they have their thugs bring in different people, like they don't turn on the lights. It's just like a little tiny bit of light going on. But it's just with the whole movie, just that look, what they were going for was something dark and gothic, and they achieved it, you know?
Yeah.
So high five for just going for a specific aesthetic and achieving it. I think that's really cool.
Well, they nailed the 90s, because even the little girl Sarah, like with her ripped up fishnet hose and her skateboard and her chokers and a little braid in her hair, like she was like straight out of like the coolest 12-year-old from the 90s that could have existed, right?
Yeah.
We would have called her a goth kid or alternative kid or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we'll go into low points. You know, like I said, I saw this younger in life at a time when I was definitely open to seeing this kind of film. Very dark, gothic, depressing kind of movie. But I will say, as a 43-year-old, seeing kind of that, like, that rape scene, and they don't just show it once. They keep showing flashbacks. Like, every time he's about to avenge his fiance, he thinks back to her being violated by this specific person, the things that they're doing. And because there's four guys involved, you have that terrible event in the beginning of the movie, then you have to relive it four more times.
Yeah. He's got to defeat every one of them.
And then the, but you know, just being a man that's married and with three kids, it was a lot for me to take on, I think. Like, it was hard for me to watch that. Whereas at 17, I didn't have those connections. Like, you're disassociated from that kind of thing. Obviously, clearly, these are terrible things, but they didn't affect me as they do now when I have, you know, I have a wife, you know, I have a daughter, and these are horrible things. So I would say I was just taken aback a little bit. I did not remember all of the human torture. Just really disturbing scenes. You know, Shelley being violated, the scenes of that guy Top Dollar, which is the head bad guy, and his girlfriend like poking out people's eyeballs, and just the real gross things that they did. You know, I think it was hard for me to watch. I'm not a big fan of watching human brutality anyway.
Yeah,
but I think watching it now, it just bothered me more.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't get much lower than rape and murder.
Yeah.
And torture.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the lowest you can go as far as darkness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, do you think that you would have felt the same, you know, sense of, okay, this guy deserved it, you know, as they're getting brutalized? I mean, that one guy with the 15 knives in his chest, you know,
major organs.
Yeah. You know, I understand where you're coming from, but it also kind of sets up for the brutality against the bad guys, too. Yeah,
for sure.
But maybe it could have been...
It does, but, you know, that makes me think of, like, there's a movie that, you know, also from closer to this time period, but it's a historical piece, Braveheart. Like, that's a revenge tale, right? He goes back and kicks some butt for various reasons, but we don't have to relive his reasons.
Oh, yeah.
For kicking butt good and example. Dealing with the bad guys.
Yeah, like it was over and over again.
Yeah, it's like you're just having to re-see this over and over. It was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, the fact you had to watch it five times, that was tough to endure. It was so horrible. You could have seen it once and it could have stuck with you.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
You know, but that's just where I am today. I will say, like, in the 90s when you watch this, you know, you're kind of, well, the other thing is I was 17. You're drawn to darker things.
Yeah.
You're drawn to more depressing things. Yeah. There's like a comfort in that.
Right. You're already angsty like that as a teen, but then it was 90s grunge era. Everything was a little darker, you know, that was just kind of the feel everybody was going for. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I would have probably been less shocked by it if I had seen it then versus just seeing it now as a 42-year-old mom.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, ugh, this place is horrible.
Which goes to my next low point, and that's just the city, and that's what I alluded to earlier. This place is a million times more horrible than Gotham City. I was shocked to find out it's Detroit.
I know. I thought it was like going to be a fictional city. I'm like, what is this supposed to be, Detroit? I never want to go to Detroit.
I can't believe this little girl's running around by herself at night.
And she's like the only kid you ever see in the whole movie. I'm like, did they just stop having kids in the city because it's that bad? Like,
I think so, yeah.
12 years ago, this was the last baby that was born and we're done. Like, that's... Yeah,
times were different back then, though. I mean, they let their kids run around, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah. And her mom obviously was not going to win any Mom of the Year awards.
No. So. No. Yeah. She was probably safer out on the street than she was at her...
Yeah, with her mom.
Honestly,
yeah.
She probably was.
Yeah.
And this is that club that they were hanging out with. They're all breaking out their guns and waving those around. And they're not getting kicked out. They're not calling the police.
No. Yeah. Like, they're...
It's like, this is a pretty terrible city. Let's not go there on our vacation.
Everything's on fire, but it's raining all the time. I mean, like, that's... Wow.
So I'm kind of kidding a little bit, but just as a low point, I mean, I'm like, this is a horrible place. I can't think of too many places that are more horrible than this.
Yeah, oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was just, like I said, I thought it was apocalyptic when I was watching
right?
it.
Yeah, it looks that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard some detractors say, or I read somewhere that a lot of the panning of the city in the cinematography looked a little too cartoonish, but honestly, it was so dark for me, I didn't pick up on that. Like, everything just looked... Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, the color saturation was kind of pulled out of it. Like, I didn't notice that, but I guess there are some critics out there that don't like the, when they do kind of the zoom out and pan over the city, it was too cartoon-like. But I don't know. I felt like that kind of could go towards the comic book feel of it, too.
Yeah. That didn't bother me. Did that bother you, Mike?
No. I mean, if you're talking about like the scenes where the crow is flying and you're seeing the city, you know, I actually kind of like that direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In those scenes.
That's a high five we should have put in. I did actually like the interaction, like the tie-in with the crow, actually.
Yeah.
But nice. I got a little science nerdiness for you here. Uh-oh. That is not a crow. That's actually a raven. They only used ravens in this movie and not actual crows.
Oh, man. Someone should have told the animal guy.
Apparently, because ravens, well, they're bigger than a regular crow, and they make that more... The noise that we think of when we think of a crow, that ravens make that caw, caw, you know, whatever it is.
Real loud.
Yeah, it's very loud, very distinctive, and so it was easier, better.
Ravens are so much bigger.
They are. They're a lot bigger. We saw ravens when we were in Yellowstone. They're much bigger than your average crow.
So ravens don't make that...
Ravens do make the noise.
Crows don't make that sound?
I think there's two different kinds of crows that live in America, and they make a little bit different, and it's more muted. It's not doesn't stand out as starkly or as loudly as that, I guess. But we should probably have our daughter in here because she could school us. She's the animal nut, you know. So, but yeah, apparently there was some discussion of, you know, why didn't they call this movie The Raven? Because they used ravens in the movie, not crows. Yeah. But, you know. I guess you do what you got to do.
Hey, they're both blackbirds.
Okay? Right. Yeah. I mean, and the average person is not going to know the difference,
no,
right?
I didn't know.
Obviously, because I didn't know either. Yeah.
Yes. So, apparently...
But he does quote Poe.
He quotes Poe. He quotes from The Raven.
Yeah.
I think when he's going into the pawn shop...
Yeah.
...to find the engagement ring that had been sold off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's...
Right. Yeah, he quotes Edgar Allan Poe...
Come on, man.
...from The Raven.
Quote The Raven and you're using a crow.
Yeah.
Any other low points that you guys can think of?
Well, I just felt like there was never, even though, yes, he defeated the bad guys that had ruined his life and his fiance's life, and in the end got rid of kind of like the kingpin guy from the city, but there was never that sense of like, brighter days are ahead. You know, I didn't feel like at the end of the movie there was like, okay, he came and did his job, and things are going to get better for Detroit. Yeah. I didn't come away from the movie feeling that way. Did y'all get that?
Yeah, we don't even know if Ernie Hudson survived.
Yeah, we don't. That's true. And who's taking... Did the morphine mom, like, is she going to stay clean and take care of little Sarah? Like, we got nothing.
That was the one... I mean, she did...
She came and made her eggs.
Yeah, she came and made her eggs, and the daughter kind of responded in a good way. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would be the brightest spot.
A bit unrealistic, because I think if you've ever known anyone who's had a narcotics issue, like, you don't just, like, get over it.
You don't get a pep talk from a guy. Yeah. And then,
he did, like, mystically, like, draw the morphine out of her
arm. Yeah,
maybe
he withdrew the
addiction.
The addiction.
Yeah, did he get everything?
Now, that would be a cool idea.
Yeah.
They didn't dig into that a whole lot.
No. I mean, I think for him personally, he, brighter days were ahead because, you know, his Shelley came and got him.
Right.
And then for the city, you got rid of the guys that arranged for the city to be burned every year. So you're right. I mean, it's not remarkably better, but it definitely is a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted something more for the city of Detroit at the end of this, I guess. Like, come on, guys.
I will say every bad guy we knew got killed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, so I might have missed it. Maybe I blinked, but did Tony Todd die? Tony Todd's character.
Which one was Tony Todd?
He was
Grange.
Oh,
that's what it says here. Grange.
He's the guy that shot the Raven. The guy that shot the Raven.
Michael Massey shot him, didn't he? He was in bed with Morphine Mom.
No. He's talking about the actual crow.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, the actual bird.
The raven. That's not a crow.
The raven.
Got you. I was smiling because I thought we were talking about the man, the crow.
I think he did get killed.
You think so?
Yeah, okay. I think he did get killed. Right, it was pretty quick.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure everybody got killed.
I don't remember him dying.
And then I wondered how the girlfriend was going to die, because it's a little weird to kill women, right, in a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the bad guy's girlfriend.
The bad guy's girlfriend.
Micah, I think. Micah.
Micah, yeah.
Micah. She was really like his half-sister or something.
Yeah, I didn't know.
There was something real seedy going on.
There was something definitely seedy going on in the relationship. But the raven slash crow pecked her eyes out.
Oh, that's right.
Both of them, which was just desserts for her for having such a... Yeah. Fascination with de-eyeballing
people. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was pretty good.
That I was okay with, the raven going after her.
And then her just kind of falling.
The crow slash raven.
Yeah. But she fell to her death, so that was definitely just desserts.
Go for it.
My low point, I'm going to get some hate mail for this.
Uh-oh.
So please,
we'll forward it to you.
Forgive me, this is only my opinion. I am a big soundtrack fan,
uh-huh.
In terms of like symphony soundtrack type, you know. And I personally felt like the music, which I know the soundtrack is classic, it took me out of the movie. And I think that for me, I would have liked an
orchestral.
Some sort of dark sounding orchestral type soundtrack.
A la Batman.
Yeah, Batman has.
Well, maybe not with the action, but it kind of just a darker, I don't know. Something like that, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt a little music video-ish at times.
Yeah, I made that comment during the movie. It was like, I don't know, it feels like a music video sometimes.
I mean, the director directed a lot of music videos.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that music. I mean, I grew up on grunge music and alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I would have liked a kind of a soundtrack that was more orchestral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I could see that. There was one time I thought it felt like a Creed video because he has that same hair as the Creed dude.
Yeah.
He's coming through like the church doors or whatever that building was. Those doors and his silhouette's there and the crow is flying in, the actual bird.
Yeah.
It did look like a Creed music video.
We should look it up. I wonder if that director directed the Creed video.
He might have.
I could see that. I could see that. It was almost, they leaned too heavily on the score, the music, and integrated it with the movie. Whereas, I mean, I don't know. I guess there's different takes on that. Would the movie be as memorable if they had an orchestral score? Because, like, that's what a lot of action movies did.
Yeah, that's true.
We've talked about this before, though. Sometimes that adds to a movie's timelessness because it doesn't pigeonhole it. I want to say it was like, was it Battle Beyond the Stars?
Mm-hmm.
Or they used... Was that one an orchestral?
Mm-hmm.
There was another movie we've reviewed.
Star Wars is that way.
Yeah. But no, there was something we reviewed that like the music really... Oh, I think it was the Charlton Heston movie.
Oh, the Omega Man.
There was so much 70s soundtrack that it was like, you know...
It felt like a 70s movie.
It felt like a 70s
even though it's
music
a futuristic
video
movie.
Yeah.
Because they used 70s music.
Yeah, watch this in 20 years and...
Right.
I mean, we grew up on that music, so... Partly, I was kind of like, oh, wow, I remember you know, that band, or I remember that. But 20 years from now, you know, people watching the movie, 30 years, you know, maybe it won't have the same.
No, that's true. This movie is like a time capsule.
It is a time capsule.
When you watch it, it's like the mid-1990s is opened up, and you smell it, and you breathe it, and it's like, this is the 1990s.
If you were there, I think then you're like, okay, this definitely makes sense. I don't... will other generations have that same reaction? You know, if you didn't live through, I think maybe. We've been inundated with so much of, say, like World War II history and lore. When we watch a movie set in the 40s, we kind of feel like that too. Like, oh, it's a time cap. This was definitely set in the 40s, but maybe it's going to take that long for people to be able to think that way about the 90s.
Maybe that's a good thing though. Maybe, yeah. Maybe that's what, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
What do you young listeners think? You young whippersnappers out there that watch this.
Do you hate it?
Do you hate it because you're like, oh gosh, this reeks of the 90s? Or is this like, well, this is pretty cool?
Mm. I heard another podcast because I was just scanning to see who else had talked about this movie. And they lumped this in with another movie we reviewed. And that was the Monster Squad as being kind of like that, I don't know, like, people who like Monster Squad are going to love this movie. It kind of gets you all the, like, Monster Squad was like tail end of the 80s. Mm-hmm. This was like definitely mid 90s. You get that, I don't know, you know, transported back to that time period.
I never got the same feeling though. Like Monster Squad.
It's nowhere near as dark as
it. Yeah, it makes me feel like the Goonies.
Yeah, or, yeah. But it's very 80s, I guess. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, it did have that guy with the leather jacket, maybe.
The cool kid?
Yeah,
yeah, the cool kid, yeah. I don't know his name.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Are there any other actors or actresses, performances you want to comment on? I don't think there was a single bad acting performance.
No, unfortunately, I don't think we hear any. Shelley says like one line as she's being loaded into the ambulance.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, like,
there's a lot of little giggling and their flashbacks.
Yeah. And that was about it. I will say, the girl who played Sarah, I think her name's Rochelle Davis. I read that she basically, like, she never acted again after this until, like, the late 2000s.
Really?
Yeah. Because like, she was asked to come back and film scenes with the replacement for Brandon Lee.
Yeah. And she couldn't.
How traumatic would that
have been? She's playing probably what, like a 12-year-old in this, 12, 13-year-old in this movie. I don't know how old she actually was, but definitely still very young to have gone through, you know,
several weeks bonding with this
guy. She's bonding, exactly. She's bonding with this guy, and then he just like up and dies.
Yeah.
Tragically like
that'd
that.
That'd be horrible.
So it really scarred her for life, and she pulled out of acting completely until, you know, the 2000s. Mm-hmm. So,
well, his Brandon Lee's fiance was. Mm. I mean, it took her 10 years to get married again.
Yeah,
or to marry.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I read she was friends with the Brandon Lee's sister and family for you know, up until now. Wow. So,
I also read where the actor that pulled the trigger that killed him. Michael Massey, he plays Fun Boy.
Yeah.
He looks like Axl Rose. I kept calling him the Axl Rose character, but he had to take a year off from acting.
Mm.
And he was having nightmares, a decade later.
I mean, that'll mess you up. That's...
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, that's terrible.
You pull the trigger and kill somebody.
Yep. And I did read. I mean, there's always speculation after the fact, but there were probably at least 5 opportunities where that gun should have been checked before the scene was ever filmed, and somebody fell down on their job basically, and just didn't, because it was just unspent waste from a clay cartridge where they'd actually been shooting a wall or something earlier that was lodged in the barrel. And there should have been a check, but like you said, the weapons guy had already been sent home for the night because they were very accustomed to like filming into the night, late into the night. Mm-hmm. And, it's just
the majority of this movie is this guy being shot at.
Yeah, very true.
And so you think of, say, a movie like we watched The Life Aquatic, there's a scene right in the middle where they go and charge these pirates,
right?
And they're shooting. Well, I'm sure that gun control would have been treated very seriously because this is the small portion of the movie in which we're going to be shooting
people. Yeah, where guns were involved.
And so for this movie, though, the whole movie, the whole time they're filming is people just violence galore. You know, shooting is happening in every scene, basically.
Yeah. How did they not have more accidents?
Yeah.
If the safety were this lax.
But I bet things got lax. So this is literally, like I said, 3 days before shooting was done. Filming was done. And I'm sure by then they thought, well, we got this dialed in.
Yeah.
That's true. That's probably true.
Well, trying to lighten the conversation a little bit. So have you guys read any of the actors that were originally supposed to play the
part of Eric Draven? I heard you mention a few.
Draven?
Like Johnny Depp, maybe?
So there was a rock musician.
What?
Who was considered.
A rock
Can you name that rock musician?
Would it have been...
I'm going to say Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, I was going to say Eddie Vedder because he likes... No,
not Eddie Vedder.
Somebody else that had that look, though.
Well, Kurt Cobain, but
I mentioned the Creed guy earlier, but
he's a little past 94, though, right?
Yeah.
Are you ready for the answer?
Yeah, let's hear it. Yeah.
I read that John Bon Jovi was.
Oh,
possibly
really?
Gone. Can you picture that?
No. Yeah. No way. Yeah. I just no.
That would have been a much different film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Wow.
He probably would have done the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. It probably would have been his soundtrack, right? Yeah.
It could have been a direct-to-DVD or direct-to-VHS.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. This is like when a wrestler gets a movie, right? You just go straight to video. I feel like that's what that would have been. I don't know. No, I'm sorry, John Bon Jovi. I'm sure there's fans out
there. Hey, listen. Gosh. The wrestlers have been taking over the theaters lately.
That's right? True. Yeah. That's true.
John Cena, you know, he's in that Fireman movie.
Oh, yeah. Strat made us watch. What is that called?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
He's a fireman.
You probably, your kids are old enough, you don't have to watch.
You got the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. And then,
oh, yeah.
Of course, the king of wrestlers being actors.
Yeah, The Rock.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
You know what's funny about that is we, you know, in our homeschooling realm, there's a Latin guy on the interwebs that we go to for help with our Latin schoolwork. And his name is... Dwayne something else, but I literally can never remember what his actual name is. So I just call him Dwayne Johnson in class when the kids, you know, the 10th graders and I are talking about it, and they're like, Miss Kim is not The Rock. He does not do Latin. I'm like, whatever. You know who I'm talking about.
Well, you don't know that for sure.
Well, that's true. Maybe The Rock knows Latin. Maybe he's fluent. I don't know if anybody's fluent, but maybe he reads and writes in Latin.
Yeah.
The ancient texts.
Anything else you guys want to say about the actors? What's that one? He was the last of the four that got killed. And he's like recounting the story to the main boss.
Oh.
And,
the goofy one.
The goofy one.
Like he was
Skank.
Really...
Skank.
Yeah.
His name is Skank, which is perfect for him.
He does a toast to T-Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty hilarious.
That was hilarious. I will say, for those four guys, like the little gang... I hated them so much.
Yeah.
Like they were, I mean, I guess that's a testament to their acting because they were just the skeeviest, nastiest humans.
Yeah.
Just, you know, what was it? It was always like fire it up or something. They had their little chant they would do.
Yeah. Oh, they pumped their fists in the air.
Like, is it an actual thing for criminals to swallow bullets? I'm just curious.
Yeah, what is that about? I was like, yeah, is this a thing? What is that? I don't know. They were disgusting. They did a very good job at making me just hate them as bad guys.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they picked people that basically made a living playing bad guys in movies.
Yeah.
So T-Bird was the bad guy in Commando, if you ever saw that.
Oh. Yeah.
And then that real deep-voiced guy, the guy that plays Top Dollar, he was in The Prince of Thieves.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah,
he looks so familiar to me.
Next to the sheriff of Nottingham. Yeah. Or the guy, the sheriff's like right hand man.
Yeah. Like henchman type.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They all just have, you know, bad guy looks. They have the right look for these parts. So I didn't like them.
Bai Ling, the girlfriend, I was looking at her, like, she's got tons of awards.
Really?
Like, but it's all, you know, Asian awards for different movies. So she might have become a really big star.
All right, now it's time for final summations. So is this a yay or a nay for you? What say ye, Mike?
You know, it's funny. When I first started the movie and I got past some of the problems that I had, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I did. I mean, it's not a movie that I think I would watch again.
Uh-huh.
But... I was glad that I watched it. It was kind of fun for me to have not watched it back then and to have always heard the name.
Yeah.
And then finally watched it. And I mean, yeah, I actually, I kind of enjoyed it. I would say a yay for me.
Yeah, for you. What about you, Kim?
Well, you know, if I could time travel back to the 90s and earn some street cred with my fellow high schoolers, then I'd be like, yes, yay, finally, I can say I've seen The Crow. But I think it's a nay for me just because I'm seeing it now with just my mom eyes, my 42-year-old self eyes. And it's so dark and bleak and just, ugh. Like, it's so heavy, you know. I there were definitely likable things about it, but I mean, I'm glad I can say that I've seen it now, so I have some context for it, but I'm not going to watch it again, and I'm not going to recommend it to anybody. It's so brutal and heavy. But I will say I'm definitely in the minority, though, because I pulled up Rotten Tomatoes, and the critic score is 83%, but the audience score is on 90% on this. So there's a huge love of this movie out there. Like, that goes way back. So it's a nay for me, but that's all right.
Yeah. Well, we'll go through our fan mail in a second. But yeah, it was all just overwhelmingly positive. I do wonder how many of those comments from people that have watched it recently versus like when it first came out. Because for me, I always thought this was like one of the coolest movies ever. You know, I just loved it. That, like I said, the aesthetic, the overall vibe of it, I thought was really cool. And I would rank it up there kind of with that Underworld series. It's that feel, that vibe. I would say yay, but definitely you have to expect probably something that's a little more dark and depressing and pessimistic about humanity than what you may remember if you haven't seen it for like 20 years, which is where I fell into it. Because when I watched it, last night, I had forgotten how bleak it was. And so it did kind of affect me emotionally. But I think it's a good film. It's well made. If you're a fan of like the Christopher Nolan Batman series, and I know you were going to say something about that, Mike, but the Batman series, it feels like the inspiration for that kind of movie. Yeah. And the character feels like the Joker combined with Batman. And it just feels like something from Gotham City, just that overall vibe.
Especially the scene where he walks up to the table of criminals. I mean, that's the Dark Knight right there. So you have to wonder how much that inspired Dark Knight.
It's a yay for me, but definitely don't watch it with the kids, and don't watch it, you know, if you're kind of bummed.
Well, and there's clearly some pretty brutal triggers here, so you got to know that, you know.
Yeah.
Read the reviews, know what you're going to see. There's some tough stuff there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's read fan mail.
All right.
Okay, Roberti590 says, loved it. Putnam2773 says, man, I saw this movie like 5 times in the theater and wore out that soundtrack.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
So I'm with you on the soundtrack. I listened to it today, and it just took me right back, man. It took me right back to the late 90s.
Don't hate me for my comment about the soundtrack.
Well, I will say this about the soundtrack. The soundtrack that I listened to isn't what I saw in the film. So there were a lot of really good songs on the soundtrack that don't really come out in the movie. And some of the things that you're talking about that are in the movie are probably some of the weaker songs on the soundtrack.
Huh, that's weird.
Great 808 State says, that man did not walk. He floated, glided, slid. What a huge, huge loss it was.
Mm. Yeah. I agree with that for sure.
I told Kim last night, one of the things that I remember most about this movie is him floating from building top to building top.
Mm-hmm.
And just how it was so smooth.
Yeah, it was.
But then you think as an adult, like if you try to like jump over things and hurdle over things and like, we wouldn't be that smooth.
No.
Edric Money says, brilliant. The film would have made Brandon Lee a star. And our buddy, H.L. McConnell, H.L. says, yes.
Aw, H.L.
Hey, H.L. Alexandros Fire says, a gothic masterpiece with a killer soundtrack. And, you know, for movies that are goth movies, like goth in the sense of 1990s, like, there aren't a lot of goth classics that I can think of.
Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice is one.
Does Hackers fall into that category?
Yeah, I
think so.
It definitely had the same vibe, right?
Yeah, basically a lot of the Tim Burton catalog.
Yeah, Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
Dark City.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've never seen Dark City.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We gotta do that one, maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if it's is that in the 90s or was that 2000s?
That's definitely in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So Ranger Cosplay, he wrote a few paragraphs here. So forgive me, Russell, if I don't read this whole thing. He says, being a huge Bruce Lee fan, I was so looking forward to this movie being released. He was devastated by the tragedy on the set that happened. He goes through some of the details that we already covered with the dummy bullet and getting shot into Brandon Lee. I felt for sure that he would be a big star. It was very stylized, probably due to Alex Proyas coming from filming a lot of music videos and, of course, the costuming and soundtrack. Yeah. It's an excellent revenge tale where the bad guys get what's coming to them. I still have my Crow posters and t-shirts and behind-the-scenes books. Like his father, even though they are gone, they live on in their films, immortalized forever.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, yeah. That is the following.
That's the following. You're right.
It's very strong.
It is very strong.
So, what are we doing next week?
We're doing the Attackies next week. So, watch whatever movie you want to watch this week, or go back to our old episodes and review, maybe not watch all 20 movies within the next week, but maybe re-listen to all 20 episodes so you can hang with us next week as we go through our award ceremony for the 20 movies we reviewed this season. I almost said semester. I still have school on the brain.
Yeah, it's not school.
It's a season.
It's a season.
A semester.
So go back, check out different episodes that you haven't listened to yet, and maybe let us know what are some of your favorite performances from these movies that we watched.
Yeah, we should go on social media and post the categories so people can start throwing out their votes.
Okay.
And we'll see how we match up.
Yeah, I'll do that this week. We'll get your votes. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Been a real pleasure.
It's so fun. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, like we said, we'll have you back next year, next season, I should say. I don't know when season two is going to happen.
Are there rules to this sort of thing? We say it's season two?
We're our own bosses. That's what's the beauty of this. Season two is when we announce it.
All right.
So that's a good point, Kim. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook so they can know when season two is about to happen.
That's right.
That's right.
Everybody have a great week. We really appreciate you.
Enjoy your movies, guys. Peace out.
Peace out.